to One Brain at a Time. I'm Dr. K.
And I'm Dr. J.
Well, what's going on, sissy?
Oh, not a heck of a lot. Just enjoying the warm weather of summer.
And where are you going in a week?
I am heading to Europe for 2 weeks, so I'm very, very, very excited.
To go to...
Well, I'm actually not going to the Olympics.
Well, technically, I think if you're in the same country, you can say you went.
I think you're right. But yeah, so I'm really excited. What about you? What's going on in your world?
Nothing, just training, training, training.
Over your triathlon.
Yeah, September 7th. I went out yesterday morning and did the swim bike leg. And the whole time I kept thinking, why did I sign up for this race? Why do I do these things to myself?
Well, you're always so glad after you've completed it.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the topic today?
So, you know, one of the things that I continually see in my work is, you know, obviously I specialize in trauma and anxiety. But another component is shame. And, you know, we as humans all have a healthy amount of shame. You know, if we do something wrong, then we feel bad and then we self-correct. So it does have a purpose in a human's world, but I'm not talking about that type of shame. I'm talking about the shame where an individual thinks that it's always their fault, that they're always penalizing themselves and thinking that they made a mistake or that they're the cause of another person's disruption. And they internalize and they feel so incredibly bad about themselves. And that is where I see the bully within the silence of their mind come online. And oftentimes I can track it back in their childhood, adolescence, by somebody mirroring back that they were the problem. So I want to talk about that today. I think it's really important. I just feel, having done this work for over 20 years and just living the life that I've had, that this is something that is more common than we think.
Yeah, I would agree. That shame prison that...
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, that we get sentenced to. I see it quite a bit with my clients, and I've also lived it.
Yeah.
I know for myself with my food.
That was a huge,
huge one that I've gotten... Oh, like I'd say 100% better.
Yeah.
But the amount of times where I would eat something and then instantly feel shame.
Yeah.
Like, why did I eat that? It's not good for me. So it manifested in that way.
And, you know, listening to you say that, what's so fascinating to me is, from a chemistry standpoint, that chemistry that is put into our bloodstreams when we feel such negativity set you up for the next time to eat.
Right.
Right? It's just about imbalance. So anyway, for today, I just want to touch upon this. I as well can identify this, that, you know, certainly the majority of my life I have worried that somehow something that I've said or inadvertently somehow I've responded body-wise, like body language-wise, has been off-putting to somebody.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I recall getting many phone calls throughout our lives where we've talked and then you call back 5 minutes later and said, I'm sorry, da-da-da-da-da. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but it speaks to that kind of shame prison, that shame cycle. I see it too, big time as a component in addictions work. Yes. You know, I was talking about food for me, but I was just having a conversation with one of my clients who relapsed, and the shame, the shame was burying them.
Yeah.
And I really had to do a lot of reframing around, no. This one decision does not define your entire journey.
Right.
And how, I think, to your point earlier, if that shame cycle or shame prison, whatever you want to label it, is a part of your neurobiology from childhood, and it follows you into adulthood, that's a really hard pattern to break, because I didn't even realize I was in it. I think a lot of times, a lot of people don't even realize they're in a shame cycle.
Yeah, no, it's true. And again, from my clinical lens, what I realized is that I just have so many neurocircuits of that pattern that it became my reality.
Yeah.
And, you know, if in our field, it's also called toxic shame. And it can be linked to childhood trauma. And, you know, it's just that place that if you don't know, then you think that you are responsible for everybody in the world's well-being except your own.
Right. Wasn't there a song? Shame! Da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Is that the wrong lyric?
Does this sound familiar to me?
It was the disco era.
Oh, hang on.
I'll have to look it up.
It was based on that theatrical or art school in New York. Fame. No.
Fame. No. Yeah, you're talking about a totally different thing. Fame was based on the performance art school in New York, but I'm talking about a disco song. Shame! I'm going to text it to you after, and then I'm going to really laugh if the word isn't shame.
Oh, my gosh.
But we digress. I was going to say real quick, last night I was watching the new Simone Biles docuseries on Netflix.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for
that. Yeah, it's really well done. But one of the things that she covers was her pulling out of the Tokyo Olympics because of the twisties. Do you remember that?
Because of the twisties?
Yeah, it's a condition that gymnasts get. It's like they'll be mid-flight into one of their maneuvers and lose track of where they are.
Ooh.
So anyway, yeah, I mean, it was probably the major storyline at the Tokyo Olympics that she ended up pulling out of competition, because especially for a gymnast to have the twisties or to have whatever this is really puts them at huge risk of injury. But anyways, so she was talking about how she made that decision to pull out a competition at the highest level, all eyes on her, because she knew that she wasn't safe.
Yeah.
And she said that the aftermath, people were just horrific, like calling her a quitter and all this stuff. But in one of her interviews, she talked about her shame. Yeah. And further on in the docuseries, it comes out that she was a survivor from that doctor who was
sentenced.
Yes. And so what was fascinating was that her trauma hadn't processed, it hadn't worked through. And so it came out in a physical form.
Yeah.
And it stopped her in her tracks, and she couldn't perform. And so anyways, I highly recommend watching that, because it really kind of breaks down that cycle of shame and what that looked like for her.
Yeah.
And how she realized that, you know, seeing a psychologist and working through this, she was able to regain her ability and is now going to the Olympics. And
awesome. Isn't it amazing how the body will stop you?
Yep.
You know, I mean, we just go along, living our lives, believing every thought that we have, living that shame in silence, living that trauma response. A lot of times people can pick up on that because it's the autonomic nervous system responding. But so, you know, when I think back on shame, I think about people who have been suffering silently with the way that they have felt about themselves. And it's really helping people understand that they're not responsible. They are not responsible. What I say to the folks that I work with is that you are 100% responsible for you. If you have a child or children under 18, you're also responsible for them, because we know humans need care in order to survive. But outside of that, everybody is responsible for themselves. And that's a real tough one to break, because when you're wired to believe that your only safety and security is showing up for other people, then I've had people say, I don't know how to do that for myself.
Yeah.
And
I think it's an epidemic, quite frankly.
And I've said, you actually do have the skill set. You just never applied them to yourself.
Yeah. That is so powerful.
Yeah.
So powerful. But again, going back to that concept that in your family of origin, if you consciously or subconsciously became the emotional caretaker, then you're just bred for that. You marinate in that, and that becomes your source of value and worth, to be the caretaker. And when people don't reciprocate or value it or whatever, it really hits a core fundamental belief of self.
Yeah, it really is about continuity of care, and it's about stability and having dependability as you're growing up, and yeah, knowing that someone is taking care of you and that you don't have to do everything in your power to take care of them in order to be seen.
Yeah. I think the other thing with shame, especially in our field, is, and I know you do this quite a bit too, about the psychoeducation, about the brain and all of that, but how the difference between getting a diagnosis, mental health diagnosis, versus a physical diagnosis,
mm-hmm,
how much shame is attached to mental health, to brain health, to, oh, I have a diagnosis of fill in the blank. And because culturally we're making gains, But there's still a stigma attached to brain health that, oh, you should be able to just get over it. I have anxiety. Oh, suck it up, buttercup. You know, where...
With medication, people are desperate to get off of their medication. Yeah. And, you know, coming from a alternative health, holistic health approach, you know, I'm all about plan A, which is, you know, depending on the brain that I'm working with, that, you know, there are options out there, but, you know, there are just times that medication is the only solution because your body needs that chemistry to fill the gap. And I've just never in my life heard as many humans stressed about not taking medication or getting off this medication. And it's exactly what you're saying. It's tied to shame. If I'm on this medication, then it shows the world that I have an intrinsic flaw, that there's something wrong with me. But if there was another part of the body that was struggling, then, you know, they're not going to have the level of shame. It's just, it makes sense medically.
Yeah. And I guess maybe some of that occurs, you know, I'm just thinking if you had a heart issue or like diabetes or stuff that you take medication to survive.
Thyroid. You know, like thyroid. Our thyroid has so much to do with our chemistry. And if that thyroid is hyper or hypo, we know. I mean, this isn't me saying this. We know that it will impact in particular with the hypothyroidism. When that is not getting the level of production, it impacts the mood. If you don't take that, then your system is going to struggle, not just brain health-wise, but other locations. So again, it's that place that I've never had somebody say to me, I've got to get off this thyroid medication. I've got to get off. Like, I don't want to be on this. I've never had a patient say that.
Right. Right. Well, that's the thing too. This might be controversial, but it seems to me, and I just taking a guess here, that thyroid, you know, if something's going on with your thyroid, that they have a couple of medications that they can choose from to take. Other health conditions, they have a couple of choices to take. But with brain, because it's really, there's so many choices, and a lot of those choices might not be right for your brain. It just feels so different, the medication process with brain health. It just, I mean, I could be completely wrong, but it just feels, because how many clients have you had or I had that try a medication and it has adverse reaction, and then try another one and the same thing, and or trying something and it just doesn't work, or you know, it's almost like a roulette wheel, you know, it's like spin the wheel and hope for the best. And that's always been a difficult thing, a conversation, because then again, if somebody's in a shame cycle, then the medication piece just feeds into, you know, whatever negative self-beliefs or whatever. But
I remember years ago in the intensive outpatient program, Suboxone clinic that I worked at, I had never heard of Suboxone. And it's, for you folks that don't know, like I didn't know, it's a combination of two drugs that help, from my perspective, the brains to start self-regulating, as somebody who's addicted to opioids can come down off of them. And I'd have patients just with such shame that they were on medication. I remember this one guy saying to me, you know, people are telling me I'm still a drug addict because I'm taking this. And I looked at him and I said, the drugs that you were using, were they prescribed by a medical provider? And he's like, no. And I said, you've got to realize that your brain cannot just get off of them. There needs to be a process of healing that brain and the opiate receptors. You're eventually going to titrate down, but it's going to be at a pace that your brain can tolerate. And you're being medically supervised. And there was the shame. There was the shame for him that somehow he was failing, that he was striving to be in recovery, but he was still using.
Right. So the question then becomes, how do you break out of the shame prison?
Well, from clinically, from where I sit, it's beginning to develop new thought patterns, which create new neural circuits. And I'm sure I've mentioned it here before, but what I tell people is that we need to create the override system, because your default system, which is all the thought patterns that you have had repetitively over the decades or years, are solidified. They're there. They're not going anywhere. But we need to create new thought patterns that your brain hasn't fired thus far. And it's like anything, whether it's an instrument, whether it's sports, whether it's art. In order to really develop this, you have to practice out of the hour a week that we meet. And the more that you practice, the more you're going to move yourself forward. So if I have somebody that says, I'm trying to think of an example. Nobody wants to be my friend. And when somebody says that, the shame that they feel is just so overwhelming. And it has become an absolute reality to this person. So I start building new neural circuits that person hasn't had before. And Byron Katie has this statement that I just use all the time. And I'll say to the person, is that 100% true? So nobody wants to be your friend. Is that 100% true? No. Okay, there we are. But until this moment, you believed it was 100% true, because nobody, including yourself, had challenged that thought pattern. And that thought pattern is grounded in your childhood and adolescent trauma of being reflected back that you're not enough. That's not okay. Because the people that did that to you, primarily, were all adults. Any adult that reflects back to a child that they're not enough, it's telling that adult's story. Even though you felt the woundedness, it's that adult's story.
Yeah.
Amen to that. I find with, again, going back to that idea of people not even realizing they're in that shame cycle, and having the first step is recognizing the thought patterns. And so I ask people to write them down, put a voice memo in their phone, become aware of what's flying around in there. And I had this one client who was like, I don't have any shame. And after 1 week of doing this exercise, they were like, oh my gosh, I ate a Snickers bar and the first thing I thought of was, I'm so fat. And then they did something and it was, oh my gosh, you're so dumb. And all of that negative self-talk language is a shame-based mm-hmm. thought process. And so that's step one, even recognizing what those thoughts are. And then step two is what I tell everybody, once you have that thought, like to this client, I'm fat, that as soon as they recognize that thought, that they have to stop and twist it, not twisties, but twist it to the complete opposite. And so I'm a supermodel. I am perfect the way I am. I am beautiful. They have to come up with three different thoughts to counteract that negative one. And a lot of people push back. They're like, whatever. And I said, hey, this is your brain. This is a marathon, not a sprint. And if you really want to change that neurocircuitry, this is as basic as it gets to start taking some power back off of those shame thoughts.
One of the things that I do is highlight that so many of our thoughts are based externally. So the statement, I'm fat, the shame comes from not being enough. It's not feeling worthy. It's I'm less than. And it's really, from my standpoint, I'm always trying to distill thoughts down, because there is a core belief that we hold from trauma.
Yeah.
And that will manifest as we grow and as our brain develops. So, you know, it's all about external measurements of success. It's money, it's home, it's degrees, it's looks, it's body, it's all of these things that people are striving in order to counter that belief system that is most of the time so buried that people don't have a conscious level understanding. But when you get into the trauma work and you really start to look at the pieces of the puzzle that create these beliefs and thought patterns and subsequently realities, you see so much of the motivation. And when a person can't attain that vision, then that's when shame comes in and that core belief starts coming up. And it's, you know, you didn't work hard enough. You weren't good enough. You didn't get that job. That girl dumped you. Like, all of these things just reaffirm that core belief system that we hold about ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, it holds us captive.
It does. It really, really does. And people that I work with, in particular the younger ones that are late teens, 20s, and even 30s, you know, it took trial and error in my life to get to where I am today and to have the depth of understanding. I had to go through hypertension crisis and be knocking on death's door to realize that trauma is not just about the awareness of it. It's about the tentacles that have gripped you and you don't even realize it until, in my case, the body was screaming, stop, stop. Yeah. If you don't stop, I will stop you.
Yeah.
And it did.
Amen to that, sissy. Amen to that. I think for me, it's the same thing. My body stopped me in my tracks, but I remember several EMDR sessions and really getting to root systems of negative self-beliefs that were full of shame. And it was almost, I used to tell my therapist, it felt like I was pulling weeds out of my brain. And as soon as I connected the dot with that, it was like, poof, okay, that one's gone. I don't have to live with that one anymore.
You know, in order for us to function as human beings, we have to suppress and repress a lot of life. Because we can't have our entire life on the conscious level, because we'd go mad.
Mm-hmm.
And in my world, it's all put into files. It doesn't mean that we don't have that data stored. We just don't have the ability to necessarily retrieve it on a conscious level. And when you would get into that subconscious world, that unconscious world, and it would come up, then it made sense. And
yeah,
you could release it, because when it makes sense, then it doesn't hold us hostage any longer.
Yeah. Well, the good news in all of this is that it's something that can be worked through.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, I've said this many times over on these podcasts, that from my standpoint, trauma therapy is not about talking about your traumas. Processing is not the correct way to triage trauma. You've got to know how the brain functions. You need to be able to read nonverbal communication. Like I was doing some exposure work last week, and we went to, you know, we started out with exposure. We've been doing this a couple of weeks, and we went to the next stage. And when I saw the nonverbal communication, I asked the person to open their eyes, and I asked them, you know, what their favorite dessert is, because I needed the brain to redirect. And it's that space where you've got to know when the body is starting to climb into crisis, because you do not want to re-traumatize another time.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Sissy.
Yeah.
I just looked it up. Evelyn Champagne King. Shame. Dun, 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 dun. It was one of the most popular disco songs ever. I'm going to send it to you after we're done.
Was that a part of the show Fame?
No. I mean, maybe they performed it on there. I don't know, but totally different.
Totally different.
Oh, Lord. Well, I think we covered shame and some important takeaways, and hopefully this was enlightening for some, and it's worth a continuing conversation. And please look us up on Instagram at One Brain at a Time, and if there's ever any questions, just DM us or post on our content and whatnot, because yeah, it's important. It's an important subject, and we should continue the conversation.
It's really important, because I was somebody that didn't realize that it was shame. I thought that it was just normal.
Yeah.
I thought that my internal system was fine. So again, it's that place that shame has a place in our lives, but it's when we make a mistake, it redirects us not to make that error again.
Yeah.
But when you carry this thought pattern that demolishes you and makes you so fearful of being abandoned and left alone and alienated because of who you are, that is when shame is really unhealthy.
Yeah.
And everybody is deserving to have those chains taken off.
Amen. Shame be gone.
Shame be gone.
All right. Well, that wraps up this episode 4, I think. So good stuff. Hey, bring us back that gold medal.
In the diving.
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. If you were to participate in the Olympics, what event would you do?
I would love to play in the field hockey games, but I'd be scared to death. The way the game is played today versus 30, almost 40 years ago.
Oh my gosh.
A completely different game.
And for reference, we both played field hockey growing up. So I agree. I watched it last Olympics and I was like, it's hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can wind up and hit that ball. Back in the dinosaur age, we had to monitor how high we can lift our sticks.
I know. I would never want to be a goalie. I think if I had to choose an event, I'd probably do synchronized swimming.
Oh, gosh. That would be fun to watch.
No, it wouldn't. Actually, I like water polo. I think that's a cool one.
Something different. Synchronized swimming.
Beach volleyball. Hello.
Hello, yeah.
I would totally do beach volleyball.
I remember being a kid and going to this club. And I don't know how it was, but we were in the pool and somebody was teaching us synchronized swimming. And I loved it. Because it was that art in water.
Yeah. Right. Well, you always like that dance and stuff.
That's what I felt like, that I was
dancing. Creative dancing. That's what it was called. Oh, Lord have mercy. Let's end on that note.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.